The single largest irrigated crop in the continental United States is grass, as it occupies nearly 2% of the land. And this time of year in the cooler parts of the Northern Hemisphere, that grass may be spotted with cold hardy dandelions and violets, or even rare types of clover. And these are some of the first bits of food for hungry insects just waking from the long cold winter. Insect populations, including many critical bee and other pollinator species, are in dramatic decline, threatening food webs in nature and food security for humans. So instead of cutting the grass and early blooms just when insects need them the most, some biologists are encouraging homeowners to commit to a no-mow May. A movement that began in England has now spread to dozens of U.S. cities, including Appleton, Wisconsin, where city policy encourages people to wait until June to mow their lawns. Israel Del Toro is a biology professor at Lawrence University in Appleton who has advanced this movement. He spoke with Living on Earth's Bobby Bascom.
So many people probably think that spring is a good time to clean up their yards, but you're saying that we should resist that urge. Why?
Yeah, the idea is pretty simple. May is actually a really important time for our pollinators that are just coming out of hibernation. So many of the species of bees that we have in the U.S. are solitary bees that overwinter underground. And so the idea behind No-Mow May is to basically let our lawns grow out and provide some early season flowers for our pollinators that are coming out of hibernation to feed on.
Well, this time of year in my own yard, I'm seeing dandelions and some violets coming out. But what kind of flowers are we talking about here? I'm sure, of course, it's going to vary across the country. But generally, what are you seeing?
Yeah, things that we would normally consider weedy species are actually really important food sources for our pollinators. So things like what you just mentioned, dandelions, clovers, violets, all of those are resources, whether native or not, that our native bees are actually depending on. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all about removing invasives and reducing invasive species as well, but we also want to make sure that we strike a balance in working with the biodiversity in our backyards.
Well, tell me more about the insects and pollinators specifically that we're talking about here.
Yep. So pollinator diversity is actually really huge. If we look at the entire U.S. as a whole, we're looking at about 4,000 to 5,000 different species of native bees. Most of them are solitary bees, and actually very few are colonial, like honeybees, or semi-colonial, like bumblebees. The rest of them tend to be solitary. They nest underground. They nest in decaying wood. Some of them line their burrows with leaves. Those are your leafcutter bees, or others will dig out little burrows inside of walls, and those might be your mason bees. And so we have quite a big diversity of bees. Here in Wisconsin, we have about 500 different species of bees that are native to Wisconsin. And amongst that biodiversity, we also have rare and endangered species. So a good example of that is the rusty patch bumblebee. The rusty patch bumblebee is federally listed as a critically endangered species due primarily to habitat loss. But one of the cool things that we're seeing is that these urban habitats that we're generating as a result of No-Mow May can actually result in bringing back some of those populations into urban spaces. Last year in Appleton, we documented for the first time a rusty patch bumblebee right downtown in the middle of a central park.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. I know that you've performed some preliminary studies that measure the impact of lawns on pollinators. What have you found?
Yep. So we've collected 2 years of data right now on No-Mow May and its effect on pollinator diversity and abundance. And what we found in year one was that by reducing our mowing intensity, not mowing during the month of May, we can actually increase pollinator abundance fivefold and increase pollinator diversity, or the number of species, threefold. So it doesn't mean that we're necessarily having more bees, but our bees are at least using these spaces that are no-mow spaces. So we know we're feeding the bees at least. And in our second year, we decided to expand it out to a couple of communities to see if this was a pattern that was just exclusive to Appleton or a little bit more generalizable. And what we found was pretty much along the same line in two other communities, Oshkosh and Wausau, Wisconsin, both saw an increase in abundance in bees as well. But one really interesting thing that we saw last year was that not only are we increasing the diversity of bees, we're also increasing the diversity of all insects, which is really great to see because insects are really this foundational layer to an ecosystem. They provide food for other organisms as well as ecosystem services like pollination and weed and pest regulation. So those things are really important things that insects are doing for us in these urban habitats.
So even somebody that maybe doesn't care so much about bees or insects, but might like to hang that bird feeder outside their window and see birds, maybe they should think about taking up this no-mow-may. I mean, as you said, insects are so foundational to many species that we care about.
Absolutely. So with insects being at the base of many of these food webs, birds and other small mammals rely on them as a part of their diet. So by increasing the abundance of insects in general, we can really start to help the broader ecosystem as well. One of the other cool things that we see as part of no-mow-may, so let's say animals and insects and birds aren't your thing, but maybe plants are your thing, no-mow-may also gives an opportunity for rare and endangered species of plants to pop up, things that might not normally show up.
Wow, that's really interesting. So it sounds like May specifically is a really critical window for a lot of things.
Yep. May is when nature is waking up from winter, right? Now, depending on where you are in the U.S., no-mow-may might not be the right time for you to not mow your lawn. It might be no-mow-April if you're further south, or no-mow-March, just depending on where you are and wherever the seasonality is appropriate.
Well, how big is the potential impact of yards for pollinators and for wildlife in general? I mean, we grow a lot of grass in this country.
That's right. So grass is probably our predominantly most homogeneous crop that we grow as a country. We manage it so heavily, right? We put all of these chemicals, fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides in it to have that greenest lawn. And maybe this is an opportunity for us to rethink some of those habits and educate ourselves on what the best practices are in maybe reducing our fertilizer use or reducing harmful chemicals that are known carcinogens. For example, glyphosates and neonicotinoids are really bad for our pollinator populations, but they're also really bad for us humans. The European Union, for example, has declared glyphosates as known carcinogens, and we still keep putting them on our lawns and often overusing these chemicals. So this is an opportunity for us to think about what's good for the environment, but also what's good for our own health and our practices on how we manage our little bits of plots of land.
So we've been talking about holding back on mowing our lawns. What about cleaning up, you know, last year's leaves or pulling out those dead flower stalks? I understand a lot of insects make their winter homes in places like that.
Absolutely. So no-mow-may isn't just an opportunity to be lazy. In fact, I encourage you to do the opposite. I encourage you to spend that time that you would normally spend mowing, educating yourself about other things that you can be doing for our pollinators throughout the summer and into the fall. And as you mentioned, going into the fall is a really important time of where we can help create habitat, nesting habitat for these solitary bees. We like the idea of leaving the leaves. The other great thing about leaving the leaves is that it becomes great compost for your yard and for your lawn in the next year. So not only are you protecting your pollinators, but you're fertilizing your landscape as well along the way.
Well, Israel, I have to tell you that this has become a bit of an issue in my own house here. My husband mows the lawn, and he's already talking about how long the grass is getting. I kind of think he's worried that the neighbors are going to judge us for not keeping our yard neat enough. How do you respond to someone with those kind of concerns?
Yeah, so the big thing is open communication and talking to your neighbors about what you're doing and why you're doing it. So if you decide to grow out your lawn for the month of May, the first thing we ask you to do is check with your local municipality to make sure that you're not violating some city ordinance. However, if your town is participating or you are within your city ordinances, then, you know, by all means, just talk to your neighbors. Let them know that, yeah, my lawn's going to be a little shaggy this month, but that's okay. This is why I'm doing it. And I promise, come June, I'm going to mow that thing and we're all going to be looking top shape. And, you know, one of the things that we do is we provide signage for our communities to let people know that our wild looking lawns actually is a sense of organized chaos, that there is method to our madness, right? That we're not just being lazy gardeners. We're actually thinking about providing homes for our pollinators.
Well, where have you seen some success with the no-mow-may movement, and what kind of pushback are you getting?
It's really interesting. I was just at a common council meeting last night in the city of Menasha, which is a neighboring city to the city of Appleton. And what we saw is a lot of pushback from legislators there, city legislators there, saying, oh, you know, we're just not comfortable with this idea. We take a lot of pride in managing our lawn, or I just had a chemical company come and treat my lawn yesterday, so I'm not supporting this. And so there is a lot of pushback from local governments because there's fear of the unknown. There's fear that things might get too crazy and out of control. But I think what we've shown here in Appleton is that those fears aren't founded in reality. Like, at the end of the month, Appleton yards go back to looking normal.
So no mow May isn't a slippery slope to bedlam then. It's going to be okay.
No, I think no mow May is more of a slippery slope into learning about your biodiversity and educating yourself and your family about the little things that crawl outside our house that are really important for our ecosystem.
Israel Del Toro is a biology professor at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, speaking with Living on Earth's Bobby Bascom.